from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Next up on this morning's Forum program, the San Francisco Chronicle restaurant critic Michael Bauer has just released his highly anticipated list of the Bay Area's top 100 restaurants. And we'll talk with Michael Bauer about his picks and what Bay Area restaurants are right at the top of your list. Forum is ahead. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to another hour of this morning's Forum program. 19 years ago, San Francisco Chronicle restaurant critic Michael Bauer began the challenging task of selecting the top 100 restaurants in the Bay Area, with his choices fanning out, as he put it, from Los Gatos to Calistoga and every place in between. The list is always eagerly anticipated, and there are changes in it year to year. In fact, the list is on our website, kqed.org, if you'd like to see it. Michael Bauer joins us in studio for this morning's second hour to talk about this year's top 100, and good to have you back on Forum.
Great. Excited to be here.
And how does the House of Rib get prime? You're sitting holding the menu of the House of Rib.
I am. Rib, yeah. Oh, why do they get prime space like that?
Prime.
Because, well, it's prime rib. No, actually, the reason is because they're one of the few places that actually have big menus that you can hold up. And so when they were doing the picture, that was the only menu I could find.
Well, I happen to be one of those who loves the House of Prime Rib, so glad to give them promotion and a lot of other restaurants that are on this list. But actually, you often get complaints, and perhaps complaints mostly from people who say, how did that make the list when I had this terrible service?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably – I just had someone this morning who had a really bad service. They wanted to charge the person $2 for a splash of tonic on top of their cocktail or something. And, you know, in there she said, but my sister-in-law had been back twice – and this was the third time they went back. Well, all of a sudden, everything was horrible because of that, you know, service incident. And I understand that. But I think 90% of the time, people don't separate the food from the service.
What about the noise? Now, you've got bells now, and you've got ratings on noise. That's a big factor for many people.
I know, and we've done that for 15 years because that was actually one of the number one complaints from readers. So we actually started doing the noise ratings, and I frankly thought it would have some effect, but it's had absolutely no effect.
I just wonder how you keep this felt boyish figure of yours. You're sometimes eating two or three dinners a night.
I do. You know, I fortunately have a good metabolism. I also, you know, I'm on the treadmill for at least an hour a day. So,
and you're often recognized, maybe less with your hair this color than the one that was last time you were on Forum. It's gone from a kind of orange to a nice ordinary blonde, but you know, you don't have to dress up in different kind of costumes like Ruth Reichel used to claim she did.
That's you know, I have before. I think it's a little more difficult for a man. And, you know, I think you have to have a certain theatrical attitude to do that because you have to take on that character. And I'm basically kind of the shy type. So I have done it, and I do try and change my appearance. I remember once at a food writers conference, they had a makeup artist come and talk about, you know, how to go unrecognized. And often it's gestures and things like that as much as your look. And I've noticed that. Like, I use my hands a lot, so I don't use.
And you're neither Jewish or Italian.
I'm not either of those, but I guess I'm Kansan, so that must have.
Kansans
must
use their hands a lot?
I guess they do.
We're talking to Michael Bauer, and 20 new ones this year have been added. Just mentioned some of those: Nido in Oakland, Coqueta in San Francisco, Sir and Star in Olema, and Ayasari in Berkeley. I think I have that pronunciation right, don't I? But
yeah.
You've kind of knocked off a couple too already. Huh?
Yeah, I have, and that's the hardest thing. And this year, for some reason, it was really more difficult. I think I started out and I turned in 106 restaurants, and then you know each day I would kind of whack one, and then it got down to the deadline. I had to whack the 101 restaurant. So it was tough, and it's not that. A lot of the restaurants, some of them deserve to be off. Some of them were off like Canteen or Fifth Floor because they no longer exist. And a lot of them, you know, it was more of a gut feeling, you know, like, well, they're still really good, but I really need to put this restaurant in. So
how much is your gut and how much is your stomach ultimately?
They are kind of all commingled, you know.
And your enzymes. You also single out a number of places that opened last year, have been around a while, and I'm using your language now, up their cooking game. Wayfair Tavern, which I like, Hong Kong Lounge, too, which I really like, and Pico and Larkspur, I also like. Madrona Manor, I don't know, in Hillsburg. But you come to the conclusion that compared to other cities, San Francisco's cooking game is really right out on top. And I'm wondering, how do you make those kind of assessments, particularly when I have friends who say to me, you know, New York has it all over San Francisco, or L.A. has it all over San Francisco?
You know, it's interesting. I just got back from New York, you know, last week. And, you know, I love New York, and New York has great restaurants. I still think per capita we have more. I mean, they obviously have more in sheer numbers. But what struck me about New York is kind of how different the cooking is there from here. And, you know, California restaurants have a different vibe than New York restaurants. It doesn't mean one is better than the other. But to me, that's really exciting. I also, you know—
How are they different?
It's kind of the obvious. I think that the California restaurants are more ingredient-driven. The New York restaurants are more technique-driven. You know, so I was using Le Bernardin, which is deservedly a 3-Michelin-star restaurant. And Eric Repair is French, and so he does these dishes that meld into one wonderful whole. You know, so the sum of the parts is better than the individual components. In San Francisco, at the same type of 4-star restaurant, it's more the ingredients. So you have, you know, more kind of like bombs going off in your mouth. The effect is different. They're both really precisely done, but it's just kind of a whole different approach to cooking, I think.
How much are you influenced by those stars, Michelin or otherwise?
I'm not. Not at all.
Just ignore them.
I do.
Good for you.
Because, well, yeah. The thing is, as a reviewer, it sounds egotistical, but the only palate I can trust is mine. Mm-hmm. I can't trust yours because I can't justify it. I can't justify what you're tasting. I can only justify what I taste. So some people may not like my palate, and so then they know not to read me. But that's the only thing I have to go on. So I don't look at the Michelin stars. I look at, you know, what I had on the plate that night.
Talking to Michael Bauer, he is executive food and wine editor and restaurant critic with the San Francisco Chronicle, also a member of the James Beard Foundation Restaurant Awards Committee. And, well, if you have a favorite restaurant or if you have a restaurant you want to find out about or a certain kind of cuisine you want to find about, this is the place to come to this hour. And we do welcome your calls. And let me give you the number now. You might want to keep in mind the fact that when Michael Bauer features a certain restaurant or if you feature a certain restaurant, you might wind up with more people coming there and it getting a little more crowded as a result. That's a real occupational hazard for you, isn't it? Join us toll free, 866-733-6786. We do want to hear from you and certainly want to hear maybe some of you who will lodge some concerns or complaints. Again, the website has a list of the top 100, and this is not just San Francisco. This is the whole Bay Area, and you are welcome to join us. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or email us, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments you might have for Michael Bauer onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also, of course, tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. We want to hear your favorite restaurants, maybe even some that fall down. We'll talk about San Francisco just for a moment, though, because the Mission has become such a place now for eating, almost identified in its own way, like Berkeley or like Napa and so forth.
Right.
Do you see things regionally like that? I mean, in certain districts, they focus on...
You're talking about here or in other cities?
Well, I mean, just throughout the Bay Area. You know, everybody talks about the great food restaurants now have to offer in Berkeley, great restaurants in the Mission. I mean, these places are burgeoning, all of them, Napa, Sonoma.
I think the Mission is probably the strongest as far as collection of restaurants. But look at Yountville, for example, downtown Yountville, which started really with the French Laundry. And now you have a whole string of great restaurants along there. You know, you have Bottega and you have Bouchon and, of course, the French Laundry.
And speaking of the French Laundry, it's still way up there, but State Bird Provisions has become, what, one of the best restaurants in the world now?
Well, I mean, it is a magical experience. I think it's kind of a chef-driven restaurant, and I think chefs love it because of the approach of their food. Now, the food is amazing, but they use kind of a dim sum approach where they will come around in carts with the cold food. The hot food will come around on trays, and they'll kind of hawk it from table to table. So what that does, it allows the chef to, at his or her own pace, to prepare a batch and then sell it. They also have a menu that has a few of their standards, like State Bird, which is quail, which is a fried quail that's on a bed of stewed onions. It's really wonderful. So chefs love that because it allows them to cook what they want and then to go out and sell it rather than having to, you know, take an order and cook what the customer wants.
How long does it take to get a reservation these days at a place like that, though? I mean, it's almost impossible.
It is almost impossible. In fact, a lot of people go and stand in line. I've even heard that you can now hire someone to stand in line for you.
Well, this is like the Cronuts in New York.
You know, it is.
With hire people to stand in line.
There are a number of restaurants like that that are almost impossible to get in. Flower and Water is another one that they stand in line. Francis is really difficult.
Not so much Gary Danko anymore, though, huh?
Actually, no. Gary Danko, if you call, it's really difficult. And I heard that on Valentine's Day and things like that, they have like a waiting list of 400. It's a huge number. No, they're really difficult to get into.
What I like about your top 100, though, is, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, it's high-end and elitist restaurants, the best restaurants and everything, but there's really a range in price here, isn't there?
There is.
It's important to you, I think.
Right, it is. There aren't a lot of strictly neighborhood places, but those are places that really cater the neighborhood. And what I try and do are restaurants that you'd be willing to drive from Berkeley or Oakland to, or that if you live in San Francisco, you'd be willing to drive from here to Oakland. So I always keep that in mind. They have to be destination worthy.
Speaking about destinations, you know, you start with A16, which I like because it's alphabetical, and they have now expanded to another destination, and you find a lot of restaurants that do that. Amber, for example, is now in Mountain View, just going with the A's again for a moment. What happens sometimes to restaurants? I mean, particularly when they have a certain chef and then they try to replicate it, it doesn't quite translate,
does it? Yeah,
translate,
I mean, often I can almost predict that it's going to go down, not usually with the second, but generally it's the third or the fourth where it starts showing in the original kitchen.
What's that Thai restaurant, L'Air's Rogue?
Right.
There's some three locations.
There. They have three, and I actually went for this one. I went to the third location. I haven't reviewed it yet, but I wanted to see how it was, and they've been pretty consistent at all three locations.
Well, that's good to know. So when you go in a restaurant, people know what you look like. I was mentioning before I went on the air, went to Marumoto up in Napa and got this extraordinary service. I mean, they wanted to make the dining experience memorable and in some ways incomparable. That must happen to you every time you go out to eat.
You know, I have been doing it so long that, and we're a small town, so I am recognized, but I'll say 90% of the time I'm seated before I'm recognized. And the thing is, when I am recognized, I think most restaurants kind of know the rules. I don't take things for free and I don't want things special. And I always sit so I'm facing the dining room so I can tell if someone is getting something different than what I'm getting.
We're going to go to your calls in just a moment, but let's talk a little bit more about your list and maybe what places surprised you. And also, maybe do you have a list of favorite dishes that we could talk about there? I know you say Marlow for hamburgers.
Right.
And actually, I say Tosca for roast chicken. Yeah.
I love the roast chicken. It's they do it on a slice of bread, which they kind of, you know, slather with the juices and then put the stuffing, which is a ricotta pine nut stuffing. And then they pile the chicken on top. It really is good. But then, you know, one of my favorites, and has been a favorite for like 15 or 20 years, is the batter-fried green beans at Coco 500. You know, I can't actually get enough of them. And I know that one time early on, Loretta Keller said that she was unable to take her off the menu now because, you know, people come in just for that.
And you mentioned the mustard capelina at, where is it, SPQR?
SPQR.
Yeah.
Matthew Acarino is an amazing chef and does the best things with pasta. And it could be, you know, a pasta that has nettle infused in it. He does a lot of flavored pastas. You can basically order any pasta. And if you go weeknights, you can have a pasta tasting menu, which is like five or six courses of just pasta.
So what surprised you this year? Any big surprises or even moderate surprises?
A few of the restaurants that I took off surprised me. I wasn't expecting to have to take them off. I think that probably it's the number of Japanese restaurants. I added three Japanese restaurants this year. And that I do attribute to the Michelin stars, because if you remember a few years ago, they did the Tokyo Guide, and Tokyo has more three Michelin star restaurants in France. And I assume it's still like that. It was at the time. And I think what happened is that chefs started really concentrating on Japanese cooking. And if you look at our four-star restaurants, just about all of them are using Japanese ingredients in one way or another.
Just had a friend who's coming in from New York, wrote to me and said, where do you get good seafood in the Bay Area? And, of course, immediately I thought of Swan's Depot, of course.
Right.
You know, it's not exactly a fancy restaurant where you sit down and have service, but it's terrific food. What else in the way of seafood would come to your mind immediately?
You know, in years past, I had a couple seafood restaurants, which are not on there now, that were just called seafood. And
Japanese are expanding in the seafood
yeah,
and shrinking.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
And you know, frankly, you don't really need a seafood restaurant here, because every menu has seafood on it. It's just like every menu probably mostly has steak or some form of it. So, you know, you don't really need to go that deep.
So remember Aqua? I mean, you know, this is really
right.
a popular place. It was
right.
all fish disappearing.
It is. They are. I mean, you still have places like, you know, Waterbar, Farallon, and things like that. And, of course, all the restaurants along the wharf, Alioto's and the Crab House, Francisca, and they all do seafood and specialize in seafood. But if you look at any of these Western restaurants and Japanese, of course, you'll find a lot of seafood items.
Let's find out what our listeners have to say. And again, want to hear your favorite restaurants or stories about exquisite dining experiences anywhere in the Bay Area, or maybe just the opposite if you want to tell them quickly. Also an opportunity for you to ask questions of one of the premier restaurant critics in the country, Michael Bauer. Let's start with you, Dave. You're on. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Okay. Thank you.
Good, good. First, I want to have a moment of silence for a restaurant that was I've gone to for 30 years. Got the same thing almost all the time, Joe's of Westlake, which leads me to my question. I always got veal parmesan there half the time, sat at the counter, watched them make it. And like I said, I've done 30-plus years, went there. It just got bought out by another restaurant, so I've been in search. So I'm looking for a great restaurant with veal parmesan.
You would need a classic restaurant. You know where I had something like that, and it's on the top 100, is Chichio in Yountville. And what they do is they kind of modernize it, but they do things like, you know, the chicken Vesuvio and all of these classic Italian-American dishes, and they do it really well. As far as Joe's of Westlake, you know, I understand your attachment to it, but I think the fact that it was bought by the original Joe's people, I think, is a good thing, because I think what they're going to do, I'm sure they're going to modernize it like they did original Joe's, but I think in the end you'll end up liking it.
I actually, this is a neighborhood place. There's a place on Terravel called Golden Mirror. I don't know if you know it, Michael.
I do know that. I've been there.
Well, it's a fun place. It's very dark. It reminds me of these old places in Little Italy I used to go to in the East Coast. And it's pretty good veal parmesan. You might try that. Dave, thanks for the call. And let me go to more of your calls here. We go to a caller in San Francisco. And by the way, please feel free to ask about restaurants outside of San Francisco. I mean, Oakland restaurants have gotten a lot of buzz lately, and there are a few of them on this list as well. And take a look at the list and see what you think. Max, go ahead.
Hi, yeah, my name is Max. You know, as far as seafood restaurants go, I think the Hay Street Grill in Hayes Valley is the best that you can get, you know, grilled fish. I heard you mention some fisherman spots on the wharf, and I think the Hay Street Grill, 35 years, has always been the best seafood spot in San Francisco.
Yeah, you know, Hay Street Grill was really a pioneer. It was one of the first restaurants that offered fresh fish and a choice of sauces, you know, very simply prepared. So, it's had a long run.
And it's kind of Alice's place. What about the chefs and the owners? They're key, aren't they, really?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, whether Alice Waters is in the kitchen at Chez Panisse every night doesn't matter. I think it has her sensibility. And I think a really good restaurateur or chef can impart that to their staff. So it is their personality that's on the plate.
We'll go to more of your calls in a moment, but here's a website comment from a listener. It says, first of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Bauer for his years of sophisticated reviews and his editorial leadership of the best newspaper food section in the country, the New York Times included. I do have a question regarding his top 100 list. In past years, he would list emeritus restaurants whose continued presence on every year's top 100 list qualified them for a kind of permanent status and allowed him to remove them from each year's list in order to make room for newer contenders. Specifically, I'm wondering about Betelnut. Does it still qualify as a top 100 emeritus? It's one of my all-time favorite restaurants and has been since it opened well over 10 years ago.
You know, it's interesting. I've actually never done that. I've never had an emeritus list. I've wanted to, and I'm thinking for the 20th, maybe I'll do that so I can get more restaurants. But as far as Betelnut, they were really great for a number of years, and then they changed their name to Hutong and changed their food, and it really slid down. And then a couple months later, they changed it back to Betelnut. And frankly, and then the chef left, and I have not been back since they've changed their name.
More comments on our website. Dorothy writes, Gary Denko used to be my favorite for a special occasion restaurant, but now it's way too crowded because they choose to have too many tables too close together. So unnecessary. So maybe that's a criteria to consider. Is another criteria should be space allocation. I don't want my butt in someone's salad because I need to get up and leave the table.
And it is an economic thing. Tables are closer together. Not as bad as it is in New York, but it's getting that way. And, you know, just about every restaurant that opens these days now has a communal table.
Facebook comment from a listener named Wendy. Frankly, it's too easy to come up with this kind of list. What many of us need to know is where to dine cheaply and well.
I agree, and we do in the paper what we call bargain bites. The thing about dining cheaply and well, those are more neighborhood specific. They aren't necessarily restaurants that you would drive across town for. And so, you know, admittedly, this is more of a destination list.
What's the cheapest restaurant on your list? Because you do have a range, a cost range.
Probably Swan Oyster Depot.
Yeah.
For years, I had La Taqueria because I still think that's the best taqueria. I finally took it off, I think, about 3 years ago when I had to change out 25 restaurants because there was such an explosion of restaurants. But I kind of regret that. And each year we do the bargain bites, which is like more than 100 restaurants that we recommend.
Here's Dorothy, who writes, noise symbols mean a lot to me. I definitely don't choose to go anywhere with 3 to 4 bells. I like to have a conversation with my friends and don't enjoy coming home feeling hoarse and ears ringing from noisy restaurants. Limon is an example of that. In fact, many of these restaurants in the Mission with high concrete walls are extremely noisy. Sometimes you're out with a group, so one can't really choose based on bells. Food is the reason after all. And again, we asked you listeners what restaurants you'd like to see on the list. Bill writes, Mason Pacific at Mason and Pacific. Food is memorable. Staff are wonderful. We'll get more of those from you, and we'll take more of your calls. Michael Bauer with us. His 100 list is on our website, kqed.org. And you can also join us by going to our website, kqed.org/forum, or emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or tweeting us. Our Twitter handle, again, is @KQEDForum. Chronicle's top 100 Bay Area restaurants. Michael Bauer, executive food and wine editor, restaurant critic. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. San Francisco Chronicle restaurant critic Michael Bauer has just released his highly anticipated list of the Bay Area's top 100 restaurants, and we're talking with him about his picks. And I want to hear from you. What Bay Area restaurant is at the top, or what Bay Area restaurants are at the top of your list? You can tweet them to us. Twitter handle is @KQED Forum. You can go to our Facebook page, or you can email us, forum@kqed.org. And there are a couple that were knocked off here. Farallon's, Michael Minow. Talk about those, why they got knocked off.
Again, it was a very hard decision with Farallon. When I was there last year, it was just you know, a little off, not enough to take it off the list. And when I went back this year, it was also, you know, it wasn't that it was bad. It was just seemed expensive. And there were just other places I wanted to include. Michael Mina was really difficult. In fact, it was the last restaurant I took off the list. And the reason was and I even posted about a great lunch I had there, is because I find it a little schizophrenic. I think that if you have the keto menu, which is their tasting menu, it's brilliant. It is 4 stars. I didn't find that with the a la carte. And frankly, when I was writing it up and I saw the price of the main courses, which were like $42 to $52, making it like the most expensive main courses in the city, I thought, is it a good value? And when you talk about noise, it is excruciatingly noisy. It always was noisy, but when they redid it, changed it from Aqua to Michael Mina, they took the cloths off the table, and it became even noisier than it was. And so when I considered everything, even though it's a 3.5-star restaurant and I loved it, you have to make these decisions so you have room for the less expensive restaurants. So it was, again, kind of that gut feeling. And I was really sad to remove it because it is a wonderful restaurant.
Well, there are a number of wonderful restaurants on there. And let's hear what our listeners have to say on that score. We go to Castro Valley. Sanjay, good morning.
Well, hi, Michael. I value your opinions. I have a quick question for you. As far as ethnic cuisines are concerned, how do you rate or judge the food, especially given that if you've not eaten the original recipe in the home country where it originates from? For example, chicken tikka masala was new to me in California. It didn't exist for me when I was in India.
Right.
And there could be lists, could be endless for other ethnic cuisines as well.
You know, I understand, and I was, it's interesting because I was in Vietnam once with the State Department doing some wine tastings, and they had some journalists who interviewed me, and they said, how can you judge Vietnamese food being an American, or can you? And I said, you're right, I probably can't judge it like you do. I can judge it as an American. I can judge it as, you know, kind of those universal things. The balance, is the balance there? And there are a lot of things that are universal in a cuisine.
Well, if you're going to eat Chinese food, you're not going to have it in China like you're going to have it
right,
here.
It's right.
Never the twain shall meet.
And so it's all relative. Do I know the nuances of Vietnamese food, even though I've been there a couple times now? No. I mean, I could probably live there for 3 years and still not know it. I mean, even in a small area like San Francisco, I sometimes feel inadequate of knowing the restaurants here. There are just so many.
Well, apropos, and thank you for the call, Sanjay. Andrew writes, Golden Gate Indian food and pizza at 46 and Judah is fantastic. Some of the best traditional Indian food in town, and they make a chicken tikka masala pizza. Great stuff. Another listener, Donald, writes, I wonder if your guest has eaten at Avatar in Sausalito. They're an Indian-Mexican fusion restaurant, eager to go off their menu and adapt to your preferences. I have a Pavlovian reaction just thinking about their Punjabi enchiladas.
I did, but it's been a while. I do need to get back there.
Sophia tweets the question, my daughter will visit Japan soon. Which restaurant has the best authentic Japanese food?
You know, I'm not familiar with what's in Japan.
No, I think she means in the Bay Area.
Oh, in the Bay Area. You know, it's not authentic, but I think the spirit of it is Ichi Sushi in San Francisco. Probably my favorite for sushi is Sushiran in Sausalito. And then Izizari in Berkeley does a really great job.
Is that how it's pronounced? Okay, thank you.
I think it's one of those. I'm not sure either.
Let me get Lee on. Lee, thanks for waiting. Join us. Hi.
Thank you. I recently had a somewhat traumatic experience. My son and I, we visited a restaurant that we had frequented when we lived on Calabas Hill. And this restaurant is in North Beach, unlike a lot of North Beach eateries. It's a very small, lovely little contained cafe-like atmosphere. And food was usually very inventive and delicious. This time, everything I had, from appetizers to the main course, was awful. And my son got something that was edible, but very small portion for what it was. You know, he ordered a roast lamb and he got a skewer with 6 bites on it or 5 bites on it. It was just really, we were so crestfallen, you know. We used to go there all the time with friends and have wonderful times with wine and pizza and all kinds of, you know, specials that they had. And
maybe it was just an off night.
No, it's not. It wasn't. No, it was something. It was lunch. It was Mother's Day, and he was treating me to this, and it was like it cost $60, including, you know, the tip. So I'm just wondering, should I say something to the owner? Because we have real, you know, we went there for years and years and years, and previous to this occasion.
And what's your philosophy about that, Michael?
You know, I always think you should. Sometimes they don't take it so well, but I think that it at least makes you feel better as a diner. At least you've done something. And that's what's so challenging about doing restaurant reviews. It not only changes from night to night, it can change from table to table the same night. Mm. And it can be predicated on your service. There's so many elements that go in, which is what I try and consider, you know, kind of restaurants. I know that they may be a little better than what I say, a little worse than what I say. But it is like a restaurant is a living, breathing organism.
I have a cardinal rule. I think if you have bad service or a bad meal, the owner or the manager wants to know or should want to know, at least. Sometimes you can, like you say, touch them the wrong way with that. But I think if it's offered in the spirit of, you know, this is something that I really want to let you know about.
And a restaurant is, they're in the hospitality business.
Yeah.
And the best restaurants bend over backwards to please customers. So, I mean, if in fact you talk to them and they're indifferent, then to me that says a lot. Don't go back there.
Here's Dan who writes, and by the way, you can give us your comments about eating out or about favorite restaurants or whatever by going to our website, kqed.org/forum. In fact, if you go to our website, you will find the list of 100 there, and you may want to respond to some of those. Dan writes, I enjoy fine dining, but neither I nor my partner enjoy eating food such as scallops, bone marrow, offal, and so on. So many of these top restaurant lists only ever seem relevant to those with the most evolved and adventurous palates.
You know, I think chefs at these type of restaurants are always pushing the envelope and trying to come up with something new. But if you look, there's usually many things that are favorites that people, you know, enjoy and that they keep on the menu.
What do you recommend in terms of like vegetarian eating? I mean, there are a lot of people who ask about that, and greens is an obvious choice. But what else? Is there anything new?
I think Verbena, which is opened by Sean Baker, who also has Gather in Berkeley. They do a good job. And, you know, places like, not in the top 100 used to be, but, you know, the Fly Trap, or not the Fly Trap. My mind is going. God. Anyway.
You'll pick it up.
Brad Levy on. anyway, they most restaurants have a vegetarian dish or two on their menu.
Daniel Patterson, I think, is coming on the show. The chef, he's booked. He's got a book out. We're going to talk with him, I don't know, next week or the week after. Qua is a 4-star restaurant.
Yes, it is.
And your thoughts about it?
Well, that was one that I was telling you about, the difference between like a Le Bernardin in New York and Qua. I mean, he's a very interesting chef and was one of the first to do a lot of foraged things and a lot of, you know, seaweeds, cooking things in hay, carrots in hay, things like that. And so it's really interesting. I can remember I was blown away once when I went through the entire tasting menu and realized there was really no meat on the menu.
What restaurant critics have influenced you? I mean, particularly. Everybody's palate is different and yours is distinctive, as you say, but...
Probably Mimi Sheraton. Way back when I got started, I mean, she was really tough, but very fair.
We'll take more of your calls. Again, the toll-free number, if you'd like to join us, is 866-733-6786. And we'll go to Petaluma and welcome Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hello, Michael. I used to wait tables years ago, Michael, at Zola's back in the 80s.
Oh, I love that place.
I love that place, too. I just thought Catherine and Rachel were amazing chefs, and Larry was great on service, and that's kind of to my point, wondering if you know Central Market in Petaluma. Tony's been around for a long time, and service was the weakest part of that restaurant for a couple of years, but it's really come around, and it's such an enjoyable place to go. I just wonder if you're familiar with it.
I am. I've been there maybe three or four times, not for probably a year and a half or 2 years. But you're right. The service was weak. So I'll have to give it a try again.
Yeah, he's picked it up, and it's worth the drive north. So.
And thank you for the call. Somebody recently said they had the best meal of their life at Saison.
Saison, yeah. It's Joshua Skeen. And I was just there last week, I think. And he does some amazing things.
Such as?
Well, I mean, it's always a tasting menu, so you never know exactly what you're going to get. But everything is touched by the fire. It could be, you know, a piece of fish that's been seared in embers. It could be a stock made from the bones that were grilled. But there's an element of smoke in everything, but it's always so delicate and so refined that it's kind of like a guessing game, picking out, okay, what's the smoked element here? And it's also very expensive.
And we have a caller who wants to know when the print version of your list will come out.
It came out on Sunday.
And we'll go to another caller. Scott, join us. You're on. Hi, Scott.
Yes, hi. I'd like to mention a restaurant that I think is one of the best Italian restaurants in the city, and it's in the Mission. It is called La Traviata. I don't know if he's been there or not. But
I've been there. I liked it.
Right. I've been there.
Many friends there.
In fact, Gerald Nachman introduced me to it, former Chronicle columnist and writer. What do you think of it, Michael?
You know, I've liked it. I think it's kind of that traditional Italian. I have not been there in probably 4 years. I assume it's as it's always been.
It was good.
Yeah.
And thank you for the call. Speaking about Italian food, French food is sort of disappearing from the Bay Area. I mean, really the old kind of traditional French cuisine. But Nico is new, and you like it.
I love Nico, and you're right. It's like, I don't know why French food is out of favor. I mean, it still informs just about every dish on, you know, the high-end menus. But Nico is one of the few that does a pure French, and it's really exciting.
I still like Le Trois. You like it?
Yeah.
And what else? Any other French restaurants?
There's La Folie.
Yeah.
I think Bouchon for those kind of classic, you know, French dishes is really good too.
Any restaurants new to your list that you'd like to mention? We've mentioned a few, but any others?
Well, I mean, when we're talking about, you know, the brand new restaurants, I think Coquetta does Spanish food. It has an Italian slant, but I've had three different friends who are Spanish who said it's the only Spanish restaurant that feels like it is in Spain. And it's not that he's trying to duplicate what's in Spain. It's just that spirit. And I think, to me, that's what makes a, quote, authentic restaurant, when a restaurant can do that, because it's never going to be like it is in Spain, because we aren't in Spain.
So Greek restaurants that break plates, things of that sort.
Sure.
Is this a lot of tapas in these Spanish restaurants now, which is more Argentinian in some ways than it is Spanish? Yeah.
No, I think tapas were at the bar. They were the small plates that went on top of the drinks, and they were a bite or two. I think we've taken liberties with it for sure.
And what about restaurants or chefs that you think maybe are undeservedly beneath or under the radar?
You know, that's a hard question, because for me, they aren't under the radar. Hmm. I think, you know, and if I think they're overrated, then I'll re-rate them. So, but I think, you know, Mark Doman at One Market is a place that people think is very business-oriented and commercial, and he's an amazing chef. I mean, I love his tongue salad and a lot of what he does. And so he's one that I think is underrated and underappreciated.
And we'll take more calls. We'll go to San Francisco. John, hi. Welcome.
Hey, how are you doing? Thank you for your show, by the way.
Thank you.
A restaurant I've always loved is the Bistro. It's on the Marina. I've always loved that restaurant. It's very authentic Italian. They got beautiful murals on the roof, and I've always loved the food, and it's very reasonable.
I was there once, but I didn't review it.
No, that's cool. I just thought I'd call in.
Well, it was good of you to put in a plug. Yeah. I'm sure they'll appreciate it. And thank you. Thank you for the call. Have you created this phenomenon? I mean, with certain restaurants that you particularly rhapsodized over that suddenly became crowded, too crowded as a result?
You know, I guess I've heard restaurants say that they get a big bump when I give a positive review, and actually when it's not even a 3-star review. But, you know, to me that's great because these restaurants deserve to be crowded.
A tweet from a listener says, in terms of food, do you think Yelp reviewers are a joke? And what are your feelings towards self-proclaimed food critics?
You know, obviously, I've been doing it for a lot of years, so I think there's something to be said for that single voice. As far as Yelp, I mean, you have to read between the lines and you have to look at it. And again, it goes back to what we were talking earlier. If you look, 90% of the criticism is service. And so they'll say, and the food was awful. But what they're really talking about is that they didn't feel respected at the restaurant. You know, it's kind of a point that you can't make too strenuously about how important service is in a restaurant. People want to feel special. And if a restaurant can make them feel that way, it doesn't matter if the food is great. People will think it's great.
Although, isn't food still at the top in terms of how people respond?
Well, it is for me, but as a professional critic, this is where we differ, I think, between a Yelp review and what I and my colleagues who review restaurants. A good critic breaks it apart. So I may have horrible service, but if I do my job, I put that aside and I look at how the food really is. Or vice versa, the service can be really sweet and you just love the people, but the food is just eh. So you have to take that into account. So what I do is I try and break apart the food, service, and atmosphere. Hopefully in the reviews, I bring it all back together to the total experience. But you have to do that.
Here's a tweet from a listener who says, I used to think Park Chow always making top 100 was ridiculous, stupid, but now that I have a kiddo, it makes so much sense. Bill writes, top dog in Berkeley, best hot dog sausages rather at any time. I think I'll go there now. And here's Steve who writes, I have been really disappointed after a number of trips to southwestern China, Sichuan, and Yunnan provinces that I can't find a really authentic restaurant. Most have standard fare, mixed cuisine, and are boring. Any suggestions?
You know, I wrote that when I did the Koi Palace review. And I'm a friend of Cecilia Chang, who owned the Mandarin. And, you know, she's always lamenting the fact that there aren't great Chinese restaurants. I mean, they do kind of the greatest hits menu. They Americanize it. And it really is difficult. And we should have great Chinese.
We have better Chinese in New York, getting back to that, that's for sure. Here's Nancy who writes, wish Chalkboard had made it. Love the two times we've been. Totally recommend.
You know, Chalkboard was one of those that was like the 106, and I took it off at the last minute. And again, the reason was I think I kept on Bravas, which is similar in a way. Chalkboard, I think it's great. To me, the atmosphere, it used to be Cyrus, and the atmosphere still doesn't quite jive with the food. And because I could have probably put 200 on the list and still left off some, I removed it kind of for that reason.
Mary asks, what about Kokari? Still find it good? It's a
Kokari,
favorite restaurant of lots
I
of
love,
people.
Yeah. Kokari, I've had great meals there and not so good. I'll say that that's probably – I'm not recognized at that restaurant generally. And I think it's a restaurant that if you are recognized, you do get a better experience than when you aren't recognized.
Another listener, Owen, writes, I want to mention Caponina on Union. Small, medium prices, actually very good. I've eaten there. Excellent Veneto-inspired food, a great place to eat and to practice one's Italian. Now the question is, the long-ago transplant from Manhattan, never been able to replace the good pickled and or creamed herring I used to buy on Upper West Side of New York City. Any suggestions?
Ooh, no.
They do much better at delis than we do.
Right, no. We are kind of lacking in the deli department. You know, and this is kind of stream of consciousness thinking, but the herring that's done three ways at Play, which is an Inn of the Opera. I mean, it's a totally different experience, but it's a Scandinavian restaurant, but that herring is really good.
I will give a plug because I think of myself as an aficionado of Eastern type of corned beef. There's a place called Deli Board right on Folsom.
Yes,
you know,
I've been
long
there.
Lines and Twitter people go there and so forth, and definitely has a young techie look to it. But boy, corned beef is probably best in town.
Mm-hmm.
What does Michael Bauer, Amy writes, think of the tiny North Beach restaurant Cafe Jacqueline? I'm a fan.
You know, I love it too, and it slipped off the list a few years ago for no reason. At one point, I kept hearing that she was going to retire. But it's one of those gems that I think people forget about, and I'm frankly sorry I've forgotten about it, because for those who don't know, she stands back and whips up, you know, the souffles, which is about all she serves is souffles and salads. So you can get like a cheese souffle as a main course with the salad and a chocolate or lemon souffle for dessert. It's kind of an only in San Francisco experience, and I love what she does.
And Oakland restaurants? Judy's waiting with her mouth open.
An Oakland restaurant?
On your list?
Yeah, I mean, I love Hopscotch. I think one of my favorite Mexican restaurants, or not Mexican, well, Comal is in Berkeley, so let me back up. Camino, I think that Russell Moore does such wonderful things. He cooks everything over fire, and he was at Chez Panisse for like 20-some years, and his food has such refinement. Also, one of the best ramen in the Bay Area can be found at the Ramen Shop in Oakland.
And you're listening to Forum. We're talking to Michael Bauer. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. And we'll go to another caller. Susan, that's you. Hi, welcome.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for this wonderful program. Mr. Bauer, we have two comments. We have a comment and a question. In a review a while ago, it was a review of a restaurant on Hyde Street in San Francisco, you made a point of noting that there was sort of an oldster crowd early in the evening, and then it got much cooler and hipper with lots of young people later on in the evening. And so I sort of boycotted the restaurant because we were so put off by your review, which is unfair. But you might want to just sort of, you know, think about the ageism inherent in those kinds of comments. We have money to eat out. Our friends have money to eat out. And we don't want to feel that because we're not a 20-something, we're not welcome.
Well,
so it's just something to think about. And then I have one other question.
Well, yeah, and let me respond to that because, yeah, I agree. Every time you mention, you know, age or anything like that, it, you know, it influences. And all I meant by that was how it welcomes everybody because, you know, it's an older crowd that flows into a younger crowd. So it's not talking about ageism. It's just kind of the facts of that restaurant. So it wasn't meant to be to put off an older crowd from going later.
No. My other question is, we had an odd experience at a restaurant in Sausalito, a famous place that shall remain unnamed. It was a celebratory meal, a Mother's Day last year. And we specifically didn't go this year because after about an hour and a half, we were asked to vacate the table. You know, the amount of money we spent was not germane. It was just an ungracious thing to do. And what's your take on that kind of thing when a restaurant's busy?
How many were there of you?
There were just two of us, and
yeah.
We were just at a table for two,
right.
And the maitre d' wanted to put together a bunch of tables for a larger party.
Yeah, no, I think that's wrong. Usually, basically, restaurants figure out how long a table will be at their restaurant, but they leave room for people who linger. If it gets really bad, they may ask someone to leave. In your case, an hour and a half is not unreasonable. And if they were going to do that, what they should have done is saying, hey, we've got this other table that we need to put together. Would you mind if we bought you a drink or dessert in the bar or something like that or made it up to you and let you make the decision? But it's wrong. They shouldn't have told you to leave after only an hour and a half.
That's always an interesting question, when a manager or an owner should say, here's a glass of wine, here's a dessert, let me pick up the check, whatever, you know, for the kinds of things that result in discomfort or annoyances or whatever. Another listener asked, what pop-ups is Michael excited about?
You know, I don't really go to pop-ups because I'm out every night. And because of that, if I don't... It's not a waste of time because it's, you know, I would love to see what those chefs are doing, but then I don't get to a restaurant that I have to review. Because with the top 100, with the review, with the updates, and with the things I do for special sections.
Forgive me. There's enough on your plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me get another caller on here, and we'll go to Carolyn in Sunnyvale. Good morning.
Good morning, Michael.
Hi there.
One of my favorite restaurants that I came in contact with last year and has literally changed my life is the Old School Cafe in Bayview. And I'm wondering, it's not perhaps the same level of cuisine that you're reviewing on the top 100, but it's certainly an iconic experience, dining experience in San Francisco. I just love the place, and I'd love for to get your comments if you've been there, what your thoughts are about it.
You know, I haven't, but if it changed your life, I definitely have to get there.
And any other recommendations along those lines will definitely be taken under consideration. Thank you. I'm going to go to Santa Fe, New Mexico. Philip, you're on. Hi.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen. I'm from Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's becoming increasingly more difficult for me to find good places to eat, simply because genetically modified organisms are in the foods that we're eating and being served in restaurants, and there's no way of knowing other than asking, well, is this item a GM-free product or not? For example, I had an event that I went to a restaurant and asked them about the oil. Now,
I'm sorry to say, Phil, we got seconds left here. A quick response to GMO and foods and restaurants?
You know, I'm kind of on the fence about that. I think that we kind of get a little too fanatic about many things, and I think that's one thing. Not that you shouldn't worry about safety in your food, but a lot of foods are...
Most foods are genetically modified in some way. But, Phil, thanks for the call. And thank you, Michael Bauer. Always good to see you. Congratulations on the list, which you listeners can find on our website, kqed.org/forum. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, with an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Engineer is Danny Bringer. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.